Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record Program 419, looking back at the anthrax attacks being recorded on August 4th of the year 2003. We've been reviewing segments, or we will have by the time we finish the program, long segments of previous broadcasts that have not been coordinated or juxtaposed. We're going to listen to Side 2 of For the Record Program number 324, but before we do that, I want to read a short excerpt from an article that we included in For the Record Program number 386, in which we reviewed some aspects of Dr. Larry Ford's career. Dr. Larry Ford had worked on behalf of elements of CIA with the apartheid regime in South Africa, developing BW weapons for Project Coast. Larry Ford had also been involved with what was purported to be an underground Bruder Bond, an underground sort of apartheid fascist group that in turn was part of a worldwide network. Among the things that was being kicked around allegedly by that network was not only specifically using AIDS as a biological weapon, but perhaps using AIDS to control the post-apartheid era of South Africa, or previously, before the fall of apartheid, the South African apartheid regime, through the use of AIDS to decimate the black population. Now, Larry Harris, the first of the two Larrys whose activities we looked at in For the Record Program number 89 from March of 1998, was apprehended by FBI, allegedly bringing weapons-grade anthrax, or by his own account bringing weapons-grade anthrax, into Henderson, Nevada. The New York Times on November 3rd of 2002 carried an article by Joe Thomas titled, California Doctor's Suicide Leaves Many Troubling Mysteries Unsolved. We've dealt with Dr. Larry Harris in For the Record 324, 317, and number 225, in addition to For the Record program number 324, or number 386. And I'm going to review a short segment of the text from For the Record program 386. Bearing in mind Larry Ford's other many connections, and again, I would refer listeners to For the Record 317 and 324. From the article by Joe Thomas of the New York Times of November 3rd of 2002, note that Larry Ford was in contact with extremists in Henderson, Nevada. That's the small town outside of Las Vegas, Nevada, that Larry Harris was involved in, or that he was passing through with his anthrax, or headed to with his anthrax. Turning now to the New York Times of 11/3/2002, after Dr. Ford's suicide, the police got tips that he buried anthrax in a gold mine. They searched fruitlessly in California. 4 months later, documents in a Nevada trash dump showed that Dr. Ford had been in touch with people involved in anti-tax and anti-government groups. Some of them had tried to use bacteria to extract gold from dirt. In December 2000, investigators searched a derelict gold milling site outside Henderson, Nevada. Again, that's the town that Larry Harris was apprehended in. They found a separator funnel, a white liquid, and Dr. Ford's business card. A federal agent said they also found directions for making chemical and biological weapons, including anthrax. But that was all. The site's proprietor had recently died of unrelated causes, unquote. Well, obviously, the anthrax attacks have yet to be solved. I would note that the anthrax attacks came at a very propitious time for Bayer. Bayer's Cipro antidote for anthrax was experienced a 33% rise, or experienced a boom in sales, which fueled a 33% rise in the Bayer stock. This after the Bayer Pharmaceuticals division had taken a beating over the recall of an anti-cholesterol drug. And we took a look at that in For the Record program number 411. I would also note that the Baader-Meinhof gang, an extreme left-wing German terrorist group, but one that had links to the mysterious and in some ways ubiquitous, perhaps more ubiquitous at this point than mysterious, although there are certainly some activities of his unknown, François Genoux, an individual who was a key operative on behalf of the Third Reich, its underground, the Third Reich in its underground phase, and who also networked with extreme left-wing interests, including Baader-Meinhof. At least one alumnus of Baader-Meinhof, Horst Mahler, was also an intimate of Ahmed Huber's as well. Whether or not there's any connection whatsoever, I would also note that a number of the September 11th hijackers had also gone to Las Vegas. Whether there was anything more there than simply high living remains to be determined. What we're going to take a look at now, or what we're going to revisit, is a section of For the Record program number 324. This is from side 2 of For the Record 324. This was recorded on September 9th of 2001, 2 days before September 11th and 9 days before the anthrax attacks. I would also note that The article quoted here is Mystery Medicine Man, or Mysterious Medicine Man, from by Larry Humes from Los Angeles Magazine of July of 2001. You're also going to hear a quote from Plague Wars by Tom Mangold and Jeff Goldberg. This is from For the Record 324 from 9/9/2001. Turning once again to the article, The Medicine Man by Edward Humes about Larry Ford, of Ford's connections to international racist organizations and the possibility that he had helped to equip terrorist groups with some of his toys, the article comments as follows. This is a review from a passage that we looked at in the first half of the broadcast. Speaking of Dr. Larry Ford and the investigators who were looking into Ford, in the process, they unearthed a trail that stretched all the way from the CIA to apartheid-era South Africa and Dr. Wouter Bassin, the man who ran the country's clandestine bioweapons program. The question still plaguing federal, state, and local investigators is a simple but urgent one. What was Ford planning to do with his germs and bioweapons expertise? The discovery of militia movement and racist literature among Ford's papers has raised the possibility that he offered biological or chemical weapons to terrorist groups. And still later, commenting on a U.S. Air Force report about the South African bioweapons program. This is a U.S. Air Force Academy report. The Air Force report quotes testimony from a Swiss intelligence agent who laundered money for Bassin and who describes a worldwide conspiracy involving unnamed Americans. Quote, "The death of Dr. Ford and revelations of his South African involvement," the report states, "raises the possibility of a right-wing international network still united by a vision of South Africa once again ruled by whites." Skipping down again. Speaking of Gideon Bauer, the South African trade attaché in Southern California who had helped to obtain some of the toys that Larry Ford made, including genetically engineered bioweapons. Speaking of Bauer here, two former FBI informants who'd infiltrated the South African procurement program named Byron and Fitzpatrick are commenting about Bauer. They say he raved about the ability to keep whites in power through biological warfare, and he hinted at being part of a separate agenda, some sort of extra-governmental conspiracy like the one described in the Air Force report that had plans to unleash biological agents worldwide on South Africa's enemies if the need should ever arise. "Just be ready," Fitzpatrick remembers Bauer warning him cryptically, then asking, "How fast could you get your daughter out of the country if you had to?" Unquote. "I have to be honest," Fitzpatrick says, "Gideon could be a great guy, but there was something dangerous about him. And when he started talking about the master plan, about what a great service Ford had done for his country, and about getting out of the country, it gave me the chills." Well, it should, noting the international networking among fascist and white supremacist elements, and noting the Nazi and Third Reich heritage and assignations of, or alliances, I should say, of the Bruderbond, and noting in that article the medicine man with a Bruderbond was contemplating AIDS as a means of returning whites to the majority in South Africa, or creating a white majority in South Africa. The possibility of a number of things. First of all, of a deliberate conspiratorial aspect to the AIDS epidemic that is devastating South Africa. That's one of the things to consider. It'll be interesting to keep an eye on future Ebola outbreaks in Africa in light of some of the disclosures of Project Coast, the ties to elements of our own intelligence system, and the alleged use by Project Coast not only of genetically engineered weapons, but specifically of AIDS and Ebola. One of the things that we're going to look at in the rest of the broadcast are indications from a number of expert observers that the white supremacist elements in South Africa, perhaps sort of a Bruderbond in exile, did not disappear at the end of the apartheid regime, but rather they went underground, they went abroad as expatriates, and in a fashion not at all unlike and perhaps as an extension of the Third Reich's going underground. Basically, we have an underground apartheid Reich, so to speak, described variously as Die Organisatie, and I may be mispronouncing it, it's an Afrikaans term, the Third Force, and also the Spider Network. All of those terms, the organization, Third Force and Die Spinne, have also been applied to the underground Reich in exile as well. The two may very well be connected, although not coterminous. Turning now once again to the book The Plague Wars by Tom Mangold and Jeff Goldberg, again hot copyright and hardcover, 1999 by St. Martin's Press, ISBN number 0-312-20353-5. We're going to examine the organization, the Third Force, the Spider Network, the Organisatie. We're going to examine indications that, in fact, just such an organization is very real, that it is feared by those who know about it. It may very well be that the organization referred to in the Air Force report and with which Larry Ford was working is this very same Organisatie. We're also going to take a look at indications that Dr. Wouter Bassin continued to be affiliated with the Organisatie and that they, the Organisatie or organization may be involved in drug smuggling as a way of furthering its activities. Turning now to the Plague Wars by Mangold and Goldberg, we read, speaking of the whites who were opposed to the ANC and the end of apartheid, the most determined of these whites came to be known as the Third Force, unquote. They comprised not the mad neo-Nazi right, but revanchist politicians and hard men in the military and the military intelligence and civilian intelligence agencies and the myriad covert action groups involved in fighting clean or dirty internally or externally to maintain white supremacy. And next, for more commentary about the Organisatie, we're going to review, or actually we're going to examine more of the interview with Nico Palm, who is a South African Defense Force engineer and who was one of the informants who provided considerable information to Mangold and Goldberg. And he had direct experience with Project Coast and some of the covert operations of the apartheid era. Of Die Organisatie, Palm speaks. By the way, it's spelled capital D-I-E, capital O-R-G-A-N-I-S-A-S-I-E. Nico Palm is quoted speaking about Die Organisatie in The Plague Wars. Palm spoke enigmatically of Die Organisatie, a pulp fiction nom de guerre, which he calls even more melodramatically the Spider Network. It's a group of white South Africans who wait patiently for the demise of the ANC government and a return to the old days. They are not the mad pseudo-Nazis of the far right, but something far more organized, well-financed, and patient. Other people know them as the Third Force. We are to hear of them from time to time. We are to hear of them time and again from ex-soldiers like Nico Palm, all the way up to South Africa's Deputy Defense Minister, Ronnie Kasriel. That's K-A-S-R-I-L-S. Significantly, files have also been opened by MI5 in London, where Die Organisatie is recognized as a small, potent, and potentially significant union of like-minded South African right-wingers. All of them are expatriates now living in the United Kingdom who may support the destabilization of any black South African government. and Gert, who provided information alleging that both AIDS and Ebola had been applied as biological warfare weapons by the apartheid regime. Gert, too, is aware of the Organisation. He is described here by the authors. It is within this context that Gert now raises the question of the Organisation. He is clearly apprehensive of its power, and it is the only moment he appears truly concerned. Quote, "These are people who take no prisoners," mutters Nico. Gert grimly nods his head. What we're going to look at next concerns Dr. Wouter Bassin's arrest for possession of 1,000 ecstasy tablets and the indications that perhaps his alleged drug smuggling activities and certainly his other activities, including perhaps a perpetuation of the biological warfare research program, this program may very well have been perpetuated, or at least its capabilities perpetuated by the Third Force. The Yakomet referred to here is Jürgen Yakomet, J-A-C-O-M-E-T, a now deceased Swiss intelligence operative who worked with Wouter Bassin. He also appears to have worked with Larry Ford. He worked with Project Coast, and he is convinced that Bassin's drug activities could only have been an extension of Bassin's activities on behalf of the Third Force. And as we're going to see here, it would appear that the capabilities of Project Coast have fallen into the hands of this Third Force. After discussing the arrest of Wouter Bassin on January 29, 1997, for possession of 1,000 ecstasy tablets, the authors ruminate, "So what was Bassin up to that night?" He says simply that he was framed. Another version has it that he did it purely for personal gain. There is a third explanation, that it was a mixture of personal gain and helping to raise funds for the Third Force, of which Bassin is considered to be a member. Bassin's possible connections with the Third Force were elliptically referred to by Jürgen Yakomet, the former Swiss military intelligence agent who worked with Bassin on money laundering aspects of Project Coast in Europe. When we met Yakomet, he was suffering from a serious facial and neck cancer. He had elected to go beyond conventional treatment and was in the hands of a private healer in the Philippines. Despite this serious illness, he remained a cheerful man, philosophical and optimistic, a good friend of Bassin's and of the old regime in South Africa. While in London on business in 1998, Yakomet was formally interviewed by officers of MI6 in room 114 of, appropriately, the Sherlock Holmes Hotel on London's Baker Street. They, too, wanted information about Bassin, the biological warfare program, and Yakomet's role in the whole affair. According to Yakomet, he told them virtually nothing. In fact, back in the mid-1980s, the Swiss agent had first worked with General Lothar Niethling, N-E-E-T-H-L-I-N-G, South Africa's police forensic chief, delivering arms to South Africa in an extensive sanctions-busting arrangement. And again, I may be mispronouncing that man's name. Perhaps it's Niethling. Niethling introduced Yakomet to Bassin, and the two men became friends. Bassin often visited Yakomet at his Bern home. Eventually, Yakomet traveled to South Africa on several occasions to help Bassin and Niethling in the dirty wars of the 1980s. Now, sitting in a quiet West London garden on an early spring day in 1998, Yakomet relaxes with coffee and cigarettes and discusses the arrest of Bassin and the ecstasy allegations. He scoffs at the prospect of his friend being a profiteering drug dealer. Quote, "It makes absolutely no sense if you know him. It makes no sense that he would mix with street dealers, and if it happened at all, there must be a higher interest," unquote. Such as, quote, "It might be to procure money to support a certain group which represents the interests of South Africa and wants the return of a white-dominated government," unquote. Yakomet, now nervous, is pressed to expand a little. "There is a group of people here in London," he says. "One could call them the Friends of South Africa. They have it in mind to see a strong white South Africa again. There are American connections, too. They need funds, and it is possible that the drug business has helped them. You know, it would be really foolish for me to talk more about this. They are serious people, unquote. Yakimet searches for the popular expression and remarkably finds the same aphorism used by Gert about the same people. They don't take prisoners, he says finally. Who are they? Yakimet mentions some well-known South African men names, men previously associated with Third Force activities. He also refers to an American name known to Britain's MI5 for his alleged involvement with Bassin in money laundering, sanctions busting, and biological agents procurement. By the way, this might very well be the aforementioned Dr. Ford. Once again, the Organisatie is mentioned in respectful tones, and once again, the details remain scant and elusive. Yakimet remains silent, and he died months later of the cancer. It transpires that MI5 officials also take De Organisatie very seriously. By the way, MI5 is British intelligence. Earlier you heard a reference to MI6. That's British foreign intelligence. Continuing. It transpires that MI5 officials also take De Organisatie very seriously. They hold details of a small group of once powerful South Africans and or ex-Rhodesians who have residential rights in the United Kingdom, but who share a community of interest in the future of South Africa. The men comprise a closely knit group which would welcome and might be prepared to help the return of a traditional white government to the Republic. These men are not political fanatics, nor is their political motivation sufficiently visible to make them liable to closer supervision. Nevertheless, they remain a troubling point of political focus for Pretoria, where both the National Intelligence Agency and the Ministry of Defense also take them very seriously indeed. The relationship between De Organisatie and Bassin is indistinct but troubling. Events after his arrest quickly confirmed that Bassin was not merely an alleged drug dealer. There was much more to it than that. And indeed, it would appear that the Third Force connections of Wouter Bassin continue to this day. And I would note in that regard that Larry Ford, again, was described as being part of this international network of white supremacists looking to return the apartheid era to return apartheid or pro-apartheid forces to power in South Africa. And chillingly, the account provided by Peter Fitzpatrick was that Gideon Bauer, the South African trade attaché with whom he had worked, had discussed the possibility of using some of the biological warfare weapons against some of the apartheid era, some of the apartheid regime's enemies, and in light of the connections between the apartheid regime and what I call the Underground Reich, and connections between the Underground Reich and elements within our own political and national security establishments, and within our own paramilitary establishment, so to speak, the possibility that elements associated with basically fascist or white supremacist elements in this country with connections to the national security establishment and with international connections to what I call the Underground Reich and perhaps the Organisatie, Third Force, Spider Network, whatever term one chooses to apply to the apparently formidable network known to people like Nico Palm and Gert and Jürgen Yakimet, the possibility of some of those elements using some of the toys developed by Larry Ford and others under the Project Coast program, and perhaps utilizing them against the United States or elements within this country along the lines of a serpent's walk scenario is not one that I would too readily dismiss. We're going to take a look now at some excerpts of an article from Foreign Affairs Magazine's issue of January and February of 2001. This article was authored by Laurie Garrett, and it's called The Nightmare of Bioterrorism, and it discusses some of the paramilitary right wing and what Ms. Garrett describes as postmodern fascists' interest in utilizing biological warfare for their own purposes. In a section called Budding Bioterrorists, Laurie Garrett writes as follows. Although most people remain ignorant of the issues raised in that scenario, handfuls of internet-hooked extremists, right-wing militia members, psychologically imbalanced belligerents, and postmodern fascists are well-versed in the fine points of bioterrorism. Recipes for producing botulinum and anthrax are posted on the web. Books describing biological warfare assassination techniques are readily available. Some private militia groups train to use biological weapons. Indeed, law enforcement leaders claim that religious cults and militant political groups are the most likely to engage in biological terrorism. Skipping down, perhaps it is the tone of some militants' rhetoric that sparks the most concern. In The Poisoner's Handbook, for example, Maxwell Hutchinson suggests that readers poison or kill Internal Revenue Service workers by filling out phony tax return forms and lacing them with a mixture of ricin, a poisonous protein, and dimethyl sulfoxide, or DMSO, a concoction Hutchinson claims is 100% lethal. The purpose of all this is to disrupt the operations of the IRS, Hutchinson writes, again quoting, "If done on a large scale, it would serve two purposes. It would make it more difficult for the IRS to operate efficiently, thus helping tax cheats and tax protesters. It might also awaken the politicians to the depths of the resentment felt by the taxpaying public," unquote. Fortunately, Hutchinson is a lousy chemist. Only simple chemicals, not proteins such as ricin, can dissolve in DMSO. But the depth of Hutchinson's antagonism is unmistakable. He suggests that readers kill Catholics by soaking their rosary beads in phytotoxin abrin, a toxin derived from a rare bean. He writes that botulinum is, quote, fun and easy to make, unquote, and he urges survivalists around the world to hone their skills, readying themselves for biological warfare in the coming Armageddon. That is from For the Record, program number 324. That was recorded on September 9th of 2001. 9 days later, the anthrax attacks took place. And note the warning in that program that the possibility that fascist elements, postmodern fascists, right-wing extremists associated perhaps with the underground Reich or international fascist elements might launch an attack against the United States. That turned out to be certainly eerie, if not altogether prescient under the circumstances. I would also note that in For the Record program number 407, there was an article about some of the strains, including some genetically altered strains, from Project Coast being offered to the United States for a certain amount of money, this for safekeeping, and to enhance the United States' anti-biological warfare or anti-bioterror capabilities. That article is titled Vials Live On in South Africa, co-authored by Joby, J-O-B-Y Warwick, and John Mintz of the Washington Post. The version of that article, or the reprinting of that article, was from the San Francisco Chronicle of April 20th of 2003. Note that U.S. authorities, for whatever reason, did not choose to buy those particular samples, and they remain in private hands in South Africa. I would also note in that context that they continued to, those samples from Project Coast continued to attract attention. From that article, "In the past 9 months, the scientist has been offered money by a German treasure hunter and a man claiming to be an Arab sheikh. Goosen," that's Dan Goosen, the Project Coast veteran, "Goosen says he turned the offers down but worries about future bioterrorism. A small container of pathogens could kill a million people," he said. I would also note that the recently deceased Dr. David Kelly, a biological warfare expert whose death in connection with allegations or whose alleged suicide in connection with allegations of disinformation by the U.S. and British governments in connection with Iraq, there certainly was some, certainly about the nuclear weapons program. But I would note that David Kelly was a very close personal friend of Tom Mangold, the co-author with Jeffrey Goldberg, of the book Plague Wars that you heard excerpted at considerable length in that side of the program. In light of the fact that British intelligence was also aware of the Project Coast residuous, so to speak, and had interviewed some of the people involved, one wonders if David Kelly, the late David Kelly, a good friend of Tom Mangold, who was quoted extensively in the media in connection with Kelly's death, one wonders if David Kelly knew anything about the Project Coast residua. That concludes For the Record program number 419, side two. Remember that both the two Larrys, so to speak, Larry Harris and Larry Ford, both tracked through Henderson, Nevada. So in a sense, for the two Larrys, all roads lead to Henderson. That concludes side two of For the Record 419, looking back at the anthrax attacks being recorded on August 4th, 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.